The 100 Years War, the Crecy period, and we're going to be getting to Crecy here pretty soon. French expenses, 1346. You know, for the most of the time, we've been keeping an eye on poor Edward and his financial woes throughout the 100 Years War, and we've seen a little some of the issues with our friend Philip VI. Boy, he's going to have problems this time, and it's just about going to will compound itself after the campaign is over. So let's look at the French expenses in 1346. Well, the new French taxes were to help upgrade the military deficiencies that the French had. And the two worst areas at this point were the shipping area and archers. Now, the archer issue, you know, they're going to hire lots of crossbowmen. And the crossbow is a very deadly weapon and is a very effective weapon, but it's a very slow loader. And it has pretty limited range. And so adding crossbowmen is not going to make up the deficiency that they have against the longbow. That's just all there is to it. The English have a technological advantage. They fire further, more accurately, and quicker than the crossbowmen can. And it's just not going to make that much difference. But at this point of the game, that's what the French believe they can do. More crossbowmen. That will mean we can compensate for the English archers. But crossbowmen are also very expensive. Those crossbows are expensive to make. You really have to be kind of a technical person. Not that firing a U-bow, a longbow, isn't technical. But it's more mechanical. There are parts that can break. There's all sorts of things that come into play. So they're going to be more expensive per person, per battle, than an English longbowman is. Now, the French evidently distrusted the quality of their own sea galleys, war galleys, and oared barges. And they were probably not as seaworthy as the vessels that you would get from Italy, particularly the Genoese. And the Genoese have first-class ships. So do the people from Monaco. The only ones that would be better than that would, of course, be the Venetians. But you're not going to see Venetians in this because they're too busy trying to hang on to their Eastern Empire island with the Ottoman Turks. The problem of the great English superiority in archers must have been apparent to the French ministers for many years. At the Battle of Morlaix, the first significant pitched battle of the war, was a somber warning. And then the Battle of Oberosch was another warning. Less than a month after Oberosch was fought, Philip VI was trying to recruit crossbowmen in Aragon. An intense campaign in recruitment was then begun in Italy, which was the main source of both skilled crossbowmen and fighting galleys. Pietro Barbera, the scapegoat of the Battle of Sluys, even though he gave good advice, it just wasn't followed, he left Paris for Genoa at the beginning of December 1345. The Marquess de Scantis, Philip VI's Lucchese financier, followed him 3 weeks later, accompanied by the Admiral of France, Flotin de Renel, and Jean Bousset. They were both recruiting in Nice, Monaco, Genoa, and other places in 1346. Philip's emissaries hired no less than 32 war galleys. And all but two of them were full-size 60-oar vessels. These ships had crews of 200-plus men per ship. Those men would also provide kind of a ready reserve of infantry and crossbowmen to do some land fighting as well as fighting on the sea. The chief entrepreneur responsible for assembling the great fleet was Carlo Grimaldi of Monaco, a veteran of past naval campaigns, and most of his commanders were either his friends or family. However, the crossbowmen who fought on the ships, they were recruited separately. In the early part of 1346, the financing for these projects fell on the war treasurers of the south of France and the taxpayers of Languedoc. The Bishop of Beauvais, who was in charge of the collection of the hearth tax, struggled to anticipate as much of it as he could. He allowed some communities to pay lump sums and gave him a discount. Italian moneylenders were then forced to make loans. I always like the idea of forced loans. King Philip borrowed money from his relatives. The Queen borrowed on her husband's account from Paris moneylenders. The French government's largest creditor by far was the Pope. Pope Clement in Avignon had always gone as far as he could to relieve the financial distresses of King Philip. He had allowed Philip to go on levying a 10% tax on ecclesiastical income and never stopped it. In 1344, he dispensed Philip from the duty of repaying previously collected money that he had collected for a crusade that never took place. But apart from one recorded loan of 50,000 florins, which is about 7,500 pounds, in 1343, Clement had stopped short of lending money to the French king. Clement thought it was inconsistent with his role as a peacemaker. However, in the aftermath, after the battles of Bergerac and Oberau, and the capture of his nephew by one of the Duke of Lancaster's commanders, Pope Clement's scruples disappeared. However, in the utmost secrecy, Philip's conspiratorial private secretary, Robert Dolores, made three secret visits to Avignon between November of 1345 and March of 1346, during which time he arranged loans of 330,000 florins, and that's 50,000 pounds. That's from Clement himself. And another 42,000 florins, or 6,500 pounds, from his principal advisors and the court bankers. Almost half went to swell the Duke of Normandy's war chest, either directly as payments to him or as an advance to his Genoese mercenaries who were in the ports of Provence. Pope Clement also loaned money to some of Philip VI's friends and commanders, such as Charles of Blois and the Duc de Bourbon. Even so, there were still shortages of cash at awkward moments. In April of 1346, the Duke of Normandy, that is the Dauphin, was forced to issue commissions to three of his financial officers to, first of all, seize rebel property, to sell letters of pardon, to sell letters of nobility, to sell letters of legitimacy. So much like in the Renaissance, we complained about popes such as Julius II having people pay him 6,000 gold ducats to make one of their 10-year-old kids a cardinal. Here we have the Dauphin of France selling letters of nobility and letters of legitimacy. He also assumed jurisdiction over certain types of civil and communal disputes. And these are disputes where there would be a fine levied and then he could keep the money. And it would do almost all the things about which his father Philip had written to him in a summonsing of the Estates General. Quote, amass all the money that you can extract for the support of our wars. Take it from each and every person you can and see to it that every penny is transmitted to the directly to our treasury. End of quote. Few documents are more evocative of the hand-to-mouth existence in the 14th century government. Pretty interesting. But we're going to collect all this money, and 1346 is a catastrophe on the campaigning schedule. But we'll begin that next time. Now, the sources for this, 100 Years' War by Pierrot, the 100 Years' War by Nylands, and the 100 Years' War Volume 1, Trial by Battle, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us with a donation or become a monthly subscriber. Thank you very much.